All right, we're going to talk with Mike Golic Jr. You know him, the host for Gojo and Golic. You can find it on the DraftKings Network. He's with Black and Abdallah here on YouTube. Mike, as we head towards the NFL draft, we're less than 2 weeks away. I think we're 10 days away from the NFL draft. You went to Notre Dame. You're a Notre Dame alum. You cover the team still. Here in Chicago, all we've talked about for the last 2 months is Caleb Williams. And for those who are not excited for the Bears to draft Caleb Williams with the number one pick, most detractors point to the game he had last season against Notre Dame. You cover the team. You talk about the team. You are a lifelong Notre Dame fan. What did you think about that performance against the Fighting Irish back in October?
Yeah, you know, that one was interesting because I think most people that had watched SC last season, outside of, you know, game one when they played San Jose State, who's a fine group of five team, but was a bit outclassed. We saw the speed, we saw everything there, and we thought, all right, perfect. USC's picking up where they left off last year. This is going to be the Pac-12 hope for a playoff team and all this different stuff. But after that, we had all watched SC and kind of seen, all right, this seems like it's leaking a little bit. It felt kind of like the Eagles in the NFL, where the record doesn't necessarily match what I'm seeing on tape. And that all came to a head against Notre Dame, where I think they were just paying the price that had built up along the way. And I looked at most of SC's season last year as, hey, even the best quarterback prospects that we've seen, if you can't protect them and you're in an offense that doesn't naturally provide a lot of answers outside of, hey, Caleb, be great in this, you know, extended RPO system and some of the air raid stuff in there, you're going to have a bad time. And so I looked at that game and knew what it was going to bring, right? We spent the whole rest of the season talking about Caleb Williams more as a draft prospect than a potential Heisman Trophy candidate at that point. The wheels fell off of the team, but I think by and large, I saw that game as, oh, okay, USC still not where they need to be defensively to help make up and offset for that way. So the complementary football was all out of balance. And then, yeah, if you can't protect Caleb Williams and you throw the kitchen sink at him the way Notre Dame's defense did, and now Golden, a lot of NFL to him, so I'm sure that's what people held on to. You get a lot of that galaxy brain pressure stuff and guys coming at him from everywhere, and it looked like Caleb was drowning, but I just don't know where the answers were for him in that offense at that point based on that.
Yeah, because what we've said is, you know, and other people have said this too, is we'll go back and look at the year before's yes. Notre Dame game. Like, go yes. look at when he had Jordan Addison and a better offensive line, and he actually had guys that could catch the football and all that kind of stuff. So, like, you have to, you know, it's not just one singular game. I mean, he lost to Utah three times and put up over 400 yards in each game. So, you're right. It's all about the defense and also protecting the quarterback, too.
Yeah, I think that the Notre Dame game the year before is a great reminder of that, because in that game, you looked at the rest of it and Notre Dame was throwing a lot at him in that game and they just couldn't get to him. He was as slippery as any player I've ever seen. He single-handedly destroyed that game. And really, I mean, if you look at a lot of USC in the last couple of years, like Caleb Williams towards the end of 2022 when the hamstrings started to pop up and all of a sudden things changed there. I mean, he did so much for an offense that at its core was incredibly simple, right? It was built off of, hey, Caleb Williams is going to make us right, whether that's as a runner, whether that's as a decision maker in the RPO game, or whether that's as one of the most extraordinary throwers of the football in this class, where I can remember it was like five plays into the Utah game from, I think this year, it might've been last year though, where that pro day throw that Zach Wilson did that made everyone go nuts, where he rolled left and threw it with the other hand. It was crazy. Caleb Williams did that in a real life game. And I mean, put it into the chest, couldn't have handed it off to the receiver better. And the receiver just dropped it. So you actually see that sort of wild stuff show up on tape for him, and consistently in a way that tends to make sense with him. He's incredibly creative. He's incredibly resourceful. He's athletic enough to get himself out of a bind. I think that's where the Mahomes comp is probably most apt, where he's never going to be a blazer speed wise, but man, he does just enough where he can kind of Fred Flintstone out of some situations for you. And so I think you're right in that, considering the sum total of Caleb Williams that we got to see in college, is a lot better way to evaluate than to just say, well, we're going to attribute all the bad things that happened to USC to Caleb Williams, because that's what we do to quarterbacks.
Mike, you know the pain that Chicago Bears fans have gone through the last few years, going back to the Trubisky era and then what we've kind of seen with the Justin Fields era. What do you think of the pairing between Caleb Williams and this current Bears roster as we head into this season?
Yeah, so I really like where the Bears roster is right now around Caleb. I think going back to the back end of last season where, you know, you bring Sweat over and it seems to stabilize things defensively in a way that hadn't really been the case since Roquan left. Offensively, some of your draft picks, you know, Tevin Jenkins, who struggled to stay healthy, but, you know, Darnell Washington and all these guys, they start to finally look like, all right, things are getting rolling a little bit. The run game's starting to look a little bit better. Some things are clicking for them, which certainly you can attribute some of that to your legs of your quarterback as well that really helped out. But I think all of that, the presence of a true number one receiver in DJ, really started to make it look like, all right, the foundation looks a little sturdier than we would have given it credit for. And so for a rookie quarterback and a top overall pick to walk into that environment, I feel really good. The thing that still does worry me is the same thing that ended up hampering Justin at the beginning of his career, which is you've got this looming threat of, all right, how good does it need to go for Matt Eberflus to remain the head coach of this team? Because now all of a sudden, if we get to this offseason and they decide, like many teams have who have taken a number one pick at quarterback, hey, we like him a lot, the quarterback. We don't like you a lot, the coach. And now we're going to reset this cycle all over again with a second season and a new voice, this time where you're supposed to be making up ground. That's still the lingering thing in the back of my mind when the Chicago team made the decision to keep Matt Eberflus and this staff largely in place. That was the thing that worried me most about this otherwise really solid looking situation.
Yeah, because like I think what a lot of people kind of look at the situation, like I understand the concern there. But then it's also like, this is a team that has the number one pick, but they won 7 games last season. Yep. Like most teams entering this situation would be, you know, a 1-2-3 win team. And so I think what Matt Eberflus at the end of last season built up in November and December, the run the defense went on and the improvement that that team made last season with an offense that couldn't move the football, I think Eberflus, at least what we think here in Chicago, has built up enough goodwill. And I think also the baseline for this team is I don't see them winning less than 7 games. So like how bad would they have to be for your concerns, Mike, to actually bubble up, right? Like that would mean that they would have to be like a 5-win team next season. And I just don't know if that's really in the cards for this group.
Yeah. Listen, that's sort of the wild card part here too, right? And I mean, you factor the division into that too. Like it's going to be a 2-team race next year between Detroit and Green Bay. I think most people analyzing the NFC North look at the progress Green Bay made relative to Detroit, who's a legitimate Super Bowl favorite, and say that'll actually be pretty close one to call the way it felt like at the end of last year. Going to be interesting to see what happens with Minnesota and what they decide to do with quarterback there surrounding the rest of a team that feels like it would have been in contention had Kirk Cousins still been the quarterback. And then, yeah, for Chicago, I guess to answer your question, I don't know what it would have to look like. This is also an organization that saw a lot of weird stuff go on inside the building last year with defensive coordinator and everything. So I don't always have a full explanation for what the vibe's got to be for anything to happen in Chicago at this current juncture, because the vibe's been a little off as of late. And so you're probably right in that goodwill department, but anytime you're weighing firing the coach even after that at the end of the season, and we know that was a conversation that got had, I do carry some of that over into the next year, and more just because, again, we've seen it happen, not just to the Bears, but over and over again. There used to be this idea, I think, that for a lot of coaching staffs, it was, hey, if I got a top pick at quarterback, I can try and time release that where, hey, we start a veteran early on in the season and we wait for things to go bad. And then I start the rookie so that everyone goes, oh, well, you need time to develop the rookie, only for the franchise to inevitably go, yeah, well, it's not going to be you. So this is probably some holdover baggage I need to unpack in NFL therapy for top quarterbacks. But I would hope that they get the chance to make this a multi-year effort, because I think the job the front office and the staff have done here as of late has been really strong.
All right, let's talk about some beef now. They have the pick at 9. We know they're going to go Caleb at 1. At 9, they could go wide receiver. They could go edge rusher. They could also, because Joe Alt is probably not going to be there, so they could most likely trade back and get another offensive lineman, likely replacing Braxton Jones. What do you think the Bears should do at 9?
I'm going to do what I do for anyone who asks me what to eat for dinner, which is, when in doubt, this draft, prescribe beef, because this is going to be one of the beefiest drafts potentially of all time. I saw Mina Kimes from ESPN post this earlier that according to ESPN stats and info, I think the record for offensive linemen in a draft in the first round is 10 from 1968. And so we're flirting with that as a number. I think the over-under for O-linemen in the first round is something like 9.5. And so we could be on the verge of that kind of record. And it always goes both ways, where part of this is need when you look around a league that's been described as having an O-line problem. I think O-line and cornerback are always places people are looking to improve because they're so important. But there's just a lot of quality dudes in this draft. And so you talk about at that point there how this could shake out, especially if the quarterbacks push some guys down. Yeah, Joe Alt's probably not going to be there. I think it could be hit or miss whether a guy like Talisi Fuaga out of Oregon State's there, Troy Fautanu out of Washington is there. What's going to happen with Olu Fashanu out of Penn State, who I think might be the biggest wild card of this offensive line draft class in terms of where he's going to go relative to the conversation that's been had. I think we had this conversation around the Cincinnati Bengals a while back when it was Penei Sewell or Ja'Marr Chase in terms of what direction you go. And while there can certainly be an argument made, hey, let's continue to get more weapons around Caleb Williams and the quarterback situation here, I think starting with protection, when you really look at the success of, let's say, the Houston Texans last year, that was a part of the story that got underrated by people like me looking at that situation and the group that he had protecting him in front of him.
Since you're with us, a former offensive lineman, if you had to compare Joe Alt to someone of the past, who would you compare him to?
Whew. Joe's an interesting one. I struggle with a comp for Joe just because he is kind of unique in that I think the sell for him is twofold, is that you've got a guy that is incredibly technically proficient, like going to walk in and be one of the guys that you can trust most from that standpoint of a high floor coming in, but also you could sell on the ceiling. He's going to be 22 years old by the time he takes his first snap this fall. He's a guy that was a tight end before he came to college and then has morphed into this offensive lineman and is a mountain of a man who also moves incredibly well. And so I think it's this weird thing where in a day and age where having O linemen come in ready-made with that pedigree of being well-coached and technically sound matters a ton. I think he also can match that with saying, hey, the athletic gifts and the underlying stuff, which just what a sheer mass of humanity this dude is, also leaves a lot of room to still grow. So I dodged your question because I'm bad at comps, but I told you a lot about Joe Alt, so I feel like that balances it out.
Yeah, it works.
It works out.
I think that works. Yeah. That's what we're going for.
So Ryan Poles is also a former offensive lineman. How do you think he's done building up this offensive line? You got Darnell Wright off his rookie season. Tevin Jenkins can't really stay healthy. They add a new center this year from the Rams. They might be looking, like we talked about, a replacement for Braxton Jones. I tend to believe that he kind of likes Braxton Jones and might go with the wide receiver or edge rusher and maybe try to find an offensive lineman later in the draft because he kind of likes to do that. What do you think Ryan Poles has done so far with this offensive line?
Yeah, by the way, thank you for fixing me on Darnell Wright very gently there as I tried to attribute it to Darnell Washington, who I believe is the large Georgia tight end that plays for the Steelers now. So we're all struggling right now coming off the weekend, and by we're all, I mean me. But no, I think he's done a really good job. I think just in general with the roster, but especially this offensive line. And I think, you know, Tevin's a good example of, hey, you know, sometimes this is going to take a little bit of time. We're at a weird place development-wise with offensive line in this league. And so I think having a GM who's got a specific background there and knows and can find, like you said, even further in the draft, quality players, they're going to go out there and get it blocked up. Like, we have so many conversations about traits and all these things when it comes to the draft. And the more and more people I listen that I trust talk about the current state of offensive line play in the NFL, the bigger premium I think that gets paid on guys that go out and come into the league with a bunch of experience, certainly meet a baseline physical standard somewhere, but are also incredibly technically proficient in what they do, because post 2011 collective bargaining agreement, you just don't have as much time on the field with these guys as you used to go out and develop what is maybe alongside defensive back, the most unnatural position in football. You are going backwards and trying to stop some of the best athletes on the planet from wreaking havoc. And you're doing it over and over and over again, where a handful of plays going wrong means you did a really bad job, even if 95% of them are great. And so I think having someone who's got a concrete background in that area as a player helps you be able to identify that along with your scouting department better than most.
Mike, what do you make of the J.J. McCarthy pre-draft conversation? He seems to be the only name that continues to get hyped at possibly going way above maybe where people expect him to be slotted in for this draft process, and especially in the first round. Some places I even saw this morning suggesting he could go third. What do you make of this entire pre-draft conversation around the Michigan quarterback?
People like that safe feeling, and I think he gives them that safe feeling because he comes from a blue chip program. He gets the winner moniker, and we saw that scouting report run around the other day that said he was 16 and telling guys, you want to chase girls and party, don't come to Michigan because we're winning. Like, people love that stuff. The NFL loves believing this is all players care about and loves believing you either have no other options or you have no other interests than this league, because really when it comes down to it, you're only allowed to have those options and interests if you're really good publicly. If not, you're looked at as a distraction. You're looked as someone who doesn't care all that much. And so having J.J. McCarthy, who is billed as a player with that Jim Harbaugh-esque single-minded focus around football, alongside really quality physical gifts, like he can move very well, he does some of the off-platform stuff, he's got a strong enough arm, all these things, and comes from a program that had some, you know, NFL stuff to its offense, but relied a lot more on its running game. I think, again, I'll reference Mina because she's a lot smarter than I am, and I heard her and someone else say Kirk Cousins, like an athletic Kirk Cousins is kind of what people get out of that, where you feel like you're going to be able to get him to come in and paint by the numbers for you and operate within the flow of your offense the way he did at Michigan, where, yeah, you know what? I'm sure maybe J.J. McCarthy on his best day maybe would have liked to throw the ball a bit more at Michigan, but understood, hey, we know the way this team is built to win, and we're going to go out and do it. And so I think that kind of talent with almost what feels like a blank slate to play with is what NFL coaches love. They all have this hubris of thinking, hey, you got a talented ball of clay there. I can make that work. I'm a better coach than the rest of these guys. We're a better front office than the rest of these guys. We know what we're looking at here, even if the rest of you look at J.J. McCarthy's college career, like a lot of us do who covered college football, and say, yeah, you know what? If he was really what he's being billed to be, why wasn't more asked of him at that level? The NFL's here to prognosticate and say, no, 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 we know what to do better. And so he's a prospect that gives them the ability to do that.
Yeah, Chris mentioned him possibly going third. Where do you kind of put Drake May and Jaden Daniels? Like, how do you have the three ranked right there?
I have Caleb and Drake, and then I have little gap Jaden Daniels, and then I have little gap J.J. McCarthy in terms of what I'd be comfortable with here. I understand the NFL is absolutely going to draft all of those guys in the first round, and I understand it'll probably be within the first top 15 picks. You know, Will Levis maybe last year can give us some pause at how that can go when we all feel so sure on something, but I unless there's like a major red flag in terms of what we find out character-wise during the lead-up process or what we find out injury-wise at something like the combine, I generally like to make sure I don't stray too far from the way that I felt when I watched these guys in college, studied them after the season with the eye on the NFL, and what I saw from that run-through was, hey, you know what? Caleb Williams and Drake May, really, I think, similar in terms of their football DNA. Both of them have had to run for their life and scramble a little bit more for their food. Both can make great plays with their eyes downfield when it comes to that. Drake just does it with a bigger body overall in this conversation. Jaden Daniels has improved every step along the way. You worry a little bit about the frame and how risky he is with his body at times, but he was able to do a lot on a team, albeit with some help. But why are we going to penalize guys for having help and then point it out as the flaw for Caleb Williams that he didn't have it? Like, at some point, yeah, you know what? You go out there and you make with what you've got, and Jaden did that. And then for J.J. McCarthy, I think everything we just mentioned falls in there. You're not going to have to worry, I think, by and large, about the stuff between the ears. It's just, hey, the stuff on the field, I haven't seen it, the throwing stuff especially, as consistently, as often, in as many pressure situations where, hey, when we need it and it's a gotta have it moment, a lot of times the ball was going elsewhere on that offense because they had so many great options in there in that backfield and otherwise here. I've seen Caleb Williams, Drake May, and those guys with nothing around them have to go out and be the only thing that was going to get that team through that moment in certain spots.
We're really enjoying watching the show, Gojo and Golic. What do you guys have planned for the rest of the week?
Rest of the week here, I mean, listen, we got, I think for us, a pretty good sweet spot here. NBA playoffs getting started this week with the play-in tournament, which is obviously really exciting. Adam Silver continues to have all his dreams come true with the Golden State Warriors and Lakers winding up in their way into all of this, making sure people want to tune in to see LeBron and Steph for however much longer we get to see that. So that'll be really exciting here. We're going to talk to Spencer Hall from ESPN and from Every Day Should Be Saturday fame. Sure. Just about everything, Channel 6 fame, about, well, this college football, not only group of players coming out here, but the future of the sport, what's coming up as we hear all these Super League rumblings that are going to start up here. And then we're going to keep chugging along with draft coverage like everybody else, man. It's a fun time. Every mock draft that comes out, I instantly hook into my veins and just begin to download. So God bless Mel Kiper. God bless Daniel Jeremiah, Field Yates, all these guys for continuing to sustain me this draft season.
We love it. It's the best time of year, and we eat it up. Thank you for taking some time and talking with us and getting ready for the NFL draft. It feels like just yesterday we were with you on a snowy day on the west side of the city, and you were trying to kick field goals in honor of Cody Parkey.
God, I, no joke, was going through yesterday deleting videos on my phone, and I came across those, and my hand hovered over it for a second. I was like, I can erase this painful memory, but no, I'm going to preserve that one. I'm going to remember it fondly, and I'm going to remember you guys fondly for the support during a very trying moment for me where I got humbled in front of a lot of people.
Yeah, hopefully we're not doing that anytime soon, that they don't have to worry about either making a field goal at the end of a playoff game because Caleb is winning every game by 3 touchdowns.
Yeah. Let's hope next time we're going out in front of Goose Island and doing anything, it's something much more attainable for me. Like, yeah, Mike, we needed to come out here and eat a whole bunch of cheese-covered pretzels or a whole bunch of
drink some beers, absolutely. Right?
Yeah, celebrate. Some beers, go down to Portillo's and drink 9 cake shakes, Mike. We really need someone with your expertise for this.
Thank you, Mike. We appreciate it. You.
Thanks, fellas.